Silence!
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Play Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 97 of Nerd Pride Radio. 97, according to the band Rush, 97 years from now, in the year 2112, a man will discover a guitar and begin a chain of events that ends in the people of the galaxy being freed from the thought control of the priests of the Temple of Syrinx, which is what Wikipedia tells me. I don't know how accurate that is. But it did lead me to understand what the Temple of Syrinx actually comes from, because I've been listening to 10001110101 by Clutch for years, and I've figured out lots of pieces of the song, because it's all just wordplay and little puns and stuff, but, you know, the Itty Bitty Babies and the King Cake, got those, but the Temple of Syrinx has completely stumped me forever, and now I know. So, you know, good on me. Ask me how I'm doing today. Go on. Ask me. That's right, I'm awesome! My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D slash Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd, plus there's like seven other kinds of nerd. I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You are listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my head anymore. Our sponsor this week, Torgo's Executive Powder. First off, updates! Nerd Pride Radio Movie Club, Movie of the Week Club. I don't even know what our official title is. I keep changing it in my head. Kyle probably knows because it's his baby. But anyway, we are off to a great start. We did our first movie, and we say it's the Movie of the Week Club, even though we're only doing one every 2 weeks, because we want to give people time to catch up. The first movie we did, 13 Assassins. Kyle posts up somebody's pick for a movie. We all discuss it. We have a good time. 13 Assassins was great. The second one, 3 Days of the Condor. I just watched it last night, and discussion started today, and it was worth watching. 1975 Robert Redford spy thriller, 40-year-old movie. Watch it and join our discussion. Honestly, it good stuff. And the next one, Zen's pick, Expelled from Paradise. All I know about it, because I've never seen it before, and I don't want to learn too much, but just looking at the Netflix cover page of it without reading anything, clearly sci-fi anime film. So I'm excited. We'll start that discussion in 2 weeks. So if you guys want to get in on the movie club, if you just want to follow the discussion, or if you want to actually, you know, watch the movies and join in on the discussion, if you want to join the club and start making picks of movies, however you want to handle it, you can get on in with us. Anyway, that's all on the forums. You can find that nerdprideradio.com/forums. Check it out. I think it's just in the regular old Nerd Talk section. But enough of that. It is time for the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. This is the time for me, when I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy, busy week, I add it to my master list. Then the best stuff off that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. And this busy, busy week was a busy, busy week at Scout Camp, which you know if you listened to last week's episode, because I recorded it while I was at Scout Camp. That was actually on the first night I got there. Now I'm back. Spent a whole week at camp. My leg hurts. My legs, both of them. My back hurts. I got blisters on my feet. But, because, you know, it, every single day there, 5 miles of walking uphill the whole day long. Oh, my God. But totally worth it. Great time. I'll get into that right now. Let's check out my master list. First up, it's time for a nerd culture report.
I thought this was bowling for weirdos.
Wow, it's weird that you think that, Gonzo. You are wrong, but so very, very close. My nerd culture report is a report on summer camp. I was at Boy Scout camp, Camp Cedars, in fact, here in Nebraska, and I had a blast. This is my 7th year going to Camp Cedars. Each of my kids, well, so far, the two oldest ones went for 3 years apiece, so I went with them for those. And I assume Eli is going to do the same, and then Noah after him. They'll have a little overlap. By the time I'm done, I will have made 11 trips to Camp Cedars. It is a Boy Scout camp, and our troop goes every year. And when I've got a boy going, I go along with them. They need, you know, at least two adult leaders from each troop, and usually many more. There's some much larger troops than us. We only took like 5 kids this year. But it is a great camp. I love this camp. It is, I can't organize my thoughts well enough, but it is a classic style summer camp. All right. When you think of summer camp, in the stereotypes of summer camp from movies and stuff, it's a classic style summer camp like that, except, with modern facilities and stuff like this, but it is, it's camping in tents. We're not even in cabins. We're camping in tents. Our old army style tents, that are set up on platforms down in these campsites that are all down the hill in the woods. And there's like 20 different campsites around Camp Cedars. Each campsite has like, 12, 15 tents in it, sleeping 2 kids each. And, but then you come up to the center of camp and we've got, shower houses with, hot and cold running water. Thank God. Doors that close and lock. You can shower and go to the bathroom in privacy. Thank God. That wasn't always the case. Which, by the way, let me just ask, why did we ever put up with communal showers? Why? When I was growing up, and I'm assuming they still have communal showers in the boys' locker rooms in high schools. I assume so. Why? When we went to camp years ago, it was, they had private shower areas for adults where we could go and, lock a door and you had to wait in line to get your turn. But all the kids were just expected to go in these big communal showers like it's a locker room. And of course, nobody was ever comfortable with that. Nobody. I mean, half the kids would go shower in their swimsuit because they're not about to go get naked in some communal shower. They'd wait until it was after hours so they could sneak in there and shower in privacy by themselves. Why didn't anyone ever think that was a good idea? I mean, again, it's just to save money, I assume. So you don't have to actually build, stalls and walls and locks and things like that. But I remember communal showers when I was a kid, and I never liked them then either. Nobody has ever liked, maybe some people like communal showers, but in general, no. Good Lord. I hate that crap. And showering at the Y? Can't stand it. So, I was so glad when we showed up this year and found out that, thank God they finally built a modern shower house and everyone can shower and poop in privacy. Oh, that's so great to know. But anyway, that I'm focusing way too much on the showers. They got a big old dining hall where, thank God, there's air conditioning and there's coffee all day if you're a leader. Oh, I went through a lot of that. And it's just a great setup. It's a great setup. And the kids, it's Boy Scouts. They're earning merit badges all day. You go to, they sign up for whatever classes they're going to take. They earn merit badges. They learn their scouting skills. They go through all sorts of stuff. And they have a full day of learning. But interspersed in between that learning, they also have a lot of free time for doing whatever it is they want to do. And there's activities offered all over. If you want to show up at the handicraft building and do leather working or, pottery or basket weaving or whatever's going on in the craft section, you've got that. If you want to go over to the science building or the nature building and check out the things going on, you can do that during your free time. You can go to the climbing tower and climb the damn rock wall during your free time if you want to. They've got a pool and there's swimming and there's all sorts of great stuff. But also, kids also have the option of just walking around, just hiking the trails and exploring, or pulling out a frisbee or a football, which our kids did a ton of times, or breaking out their cards and playing a game of Magic the Gathering, which is what all the staff did when they didn't have anything to do. It was just really cool. And so, yes, it's a camp that has a mixture of structure, because, you got to be up on time, to go out for the opening ceremony. You've got to be to meals on time. You've got to have your waiters there to do all the serving and cleaning. You have to get to your classes and get stuff accomplished. But then during the free time, they can do whatever they want. And I had one kid who came up to me no less than 3 times during camp. You go, wow, this is so much better than 4-H camp. Oh, at 4-H camp, they had something scheduled for you every moment of the day. Here, I get to choose things. I'm like, yeah, I know. Isn't that cool? It's just, they have a ton of fun. And it was great for them. And it was, for my kids, especially the ones I brought along this trip, to see all of them really take hold of this independence and make something of it, it was phenomenal. It was really good for them, and I think it changed all of them, and they learned a lot from it. Not just the merit badge stuff, because that stuff is good and it's valuable to them. But even, you know, things like, I just make little suggestions that, you know, like there's a lot of rain right before we got there, and they had some new construction for those awesome, awesome shower houses. And so they had some new grass that's planted, and the stakes and ropes that are set up to kind of keep people off the new grass. Well, the rains and flooding had washed out some of that. It's like, hey guys, there's a bunch of those stakes and stuff that are, they're knocked over. I have a mallet. You know, do you think it'd be nice for them if someone went and took care of that for them? And they were so thrilled. It's not like I had to go order them to do it. I made a suggestion, and they were so excited. So they grabbed the stuff, and they went up there, and they started hammering in stakes, and they did like a good 45 minutes of actual heavy work to get these things set back up again. You know, helping other troops get their stuff hauled in on the first day when, again, it was muddy and terrible. Just volunteering for stuff. And I'm like, why can't they be like this at home? Oh, wouldn't it be so nice if they would just jump up and happily volunteer for this kind of work all the time? But there at camp, I mean, it was like, I don't know. They felt like they were in charge. They were the men. They were doing stuff. And it was cool for them. But that's not the big part about camp. Okay. The big part about camp that made it so worthwhile, especially at Camp Cedars. I don't have experience at any other organized camp. None whatsoever. Scouts in our troop have gone off to do other big camps and gone off to other places where they've got all sorts of cool stuff. And I've been to little things, you know, Cub Scout camps where you go for a weekend or you go for, go for a day or whatever. But as far as, you know, big organized camps, Camp Cedars is the only one I know and the only one I can speak to. And I hope it's exemplary. I hope it is a good example of what is available out there, because Camp Cedars is amazing. And what makes it so is the staff members that they have working there. This was one of the amazing things for me. I've seen it before, but I've never really put it into full context until this time. I walk in and the entire staff, beginning to end, top to bottom, is a camp full of nerds. I mean, just awesome, wonderful, glorious nerds everywhere you look. And when I say nerd, I mean each one of them is a complete dork about whatever it is that they're teaching. Whatever their area is, that's their passion, and it's what they love doing. And they know everything about it, and they can't wait to share it with everybody else coming in. That's the magic part, is how excited they are to get other people excited about what they're doing. You go up to the handicraft building where, I mean, again, it's pottery and leather work and woodworking and basket weaving and all sorts of other craft stuff that's up there. And the guys that are up there love what they're doing. They are thrilled. And when I say guys, there's also girls on staff as well. I mean, yes, it's a Boy Scout camp, and it is probably majority dudes, but that's not. But there were plenty of women and girls who worked there as well. All of them just as nerdy as the guys, and all of them equally as cool and a lot of fun. And so you go up there, and these people working in handicrafts are just thrilled to death about pottery or basket weaving or whatever it is, and they can't wait to show the kids how it works and get them excited about doing it. One of the guys is talking about, well, yeah, here's where I was working earlier, but now I'm doing handicrafts, so obviously a promotion. And I mean, and I was so happy for him because, yeah, to him, this is where his passion lies. Awesome. All right. You go over to the nature building, and they will tell you the exact same stuff about nature. All right. Get to the STEM center, and I didn't get to the STEM stuff this time. Can you believe it? Somehow it just never worked out as I was traveling with different kids through the day and getting the meetings. And although I didn't do most of the meetings, the other scoutmaster did most of the meetings. He was awesome. So thank goodness for him. But all the people up there just loved what they were doing. All right. And my kids, the first year scouts, were mostly doing what they call kit fox. And this is where you're getting your beginning scout skills, earning your tenderfoot badge and getting all your beginning skills. And then they did first aid and they did, you know, your knot tying and your camping stuff, your knife and fire safety, your, they did swimming classes and they did, I mean, they did a lot of stuff. And they did some science and they did some nature and they did some handicraft and introduction to everything. But their Kit Fox staff, the guys and girls working in this area were so just upbeat and enthusiastic. We're talking, you know, 16, 17, 18-year-old kids who are teaching these classes, and they were just so passionate about it. I mean, God, they're up at, I know, they're up at 6 in the morning getting things ready. These kids are down there by 8, 8:15, and the staff are just fired up and ready to get other people fired up. I can't, this is probably boring to you guys as an audience, but I'm telling you, I fell in love with this entire staff. They were wonderful. Everything they did. Oh, remember when I told you how excited I was that the Night Skies presentation would be coming up and they'd be out there with their telescopes and I'd get my chance to look at Jupiter and Venus through the telescopes and how awesome it was going to be? Well, guess what? It happened. And it was even more awesome than that, because I didn't know Saturn was out as well. And I got to look through, and me, with all my kids, and I mean, I was telling everybody, it was Tuesday night, was when they were going to do Night Skies, and I mean, I told anybody who would ask at camp, you know, that, oh yeah, Tuesday night, you're going to be out there, right? You're going to be out there? You're going to see the telescope? You're going to look at the planets? It's going to be awesome. You can't miss this. I told everybody. And, I mean, even while we were out there, and there's people passing by just on their way back to their own camp or wherever they're going, and they'd pass by, and on their way by, they'd make some comments, go, hey, what's going on here? I would grab them, I'd go, oh, what's going on here? Do you want to see Jupiter? Do you want to see the moons of Jupiter? It's right there. Look through that eyepiece. And so they would, and then they'd hang around for a half hour, checking out everything. It was amazing, okay, because not only did I get to see Saturn and the rings of Saturn, all right, and clear as day, the rings of Saturn, and then the gal running the telescope, this one, there was a bunch of people out there, I'll get to them in a minute, and she says, okay, now, look off at about 4 o'clock, you see that dot? I'm like, oh my God, is that a moon? Is that Titan? She's like, that's Titan. Oh, that's awesome. So Saturn with rings, with Titan in shot. Spectacular. Okay. Next, Venus. Venus, and I forgot Venus has phases because it's closer to the sun than we are. And so Venus will have phases just like the moon does when seen from our point of view. And we were looking at it's bright as all hell in the sky. I mean, it's Venus, for goodness sake. And yet, I'm looking through the telescope, it's a crescent Venus. Oh, that's amazing. It was gorgeous. And then, of course, the granddaddy of all of them, my absolute favorite, I get to see Jupiter. And I'm looking at, and you know, and I mean, we started looking even before the sky was completely dark, because the planets were out in force. And then as it got darker and darker, more stuff becomes visible. Eli was right there with me, and Eli's like, I can see the bands. I can see the different colors. I'm like, I know. Isn't that great? And then they start explaining that, okay, on this side, you see those two dots there? Yeah, okay, that's two of the moons. And I'm like, which ones? He's like, well, I got a card here somewhere. And so pulls out the card and we sort it out. And we're like, oh, it's Callisto and Ganymede. Oh, that's spectacular. And so I could look at the dots and I could know, okay, there's Callisto, there's Ganymede. I'm like, oh, Io and Europa are my favorites. Oh, I wish I could see those two. Well, sure enough, 15 minutes later, I got dark enough, I could see all four moons. It was beautiful. I was looking at Io, Europa, Callisto, Ganymede, Orange. Am I being a dork about this? It was so beautiful. It was so beautiful. All right. So I get my telescope experience and I share it with Eli, who was just as floored as I was. He had a great time looking at and because he's young and he's got better eyes than I did, he could see some of the colors better than I could. When they got us, they shared their binoculars with us just to check out. Okay, up here is, I think we were looking at Vega at the time. All right, there's Vega. And then below Vega, she tells us there's two double star systems down below. And I couldn't see. I could see that there were two stars on the one side, but I'm trying to hold these binoculars steady, but I'm looking at a dual star system through binoculars. And I can see that there's two stars, and I can see that one of them is like a bright blue or bright green, and the other one isn't, but I can't quite make it out. So Eli tries it out. He spots them. He's like, oh, yeah, one's green and one's red. What's up with that? And sure enough, it's a dual star system and two different colored stars right there next to each other. It was beautiful. And that was the other cool part of this. All right, I'm sharing this with all the scouts were there with me from our group, plus a bunch of other scouts, and we were all having a great time and sharing. I was just especially moved that Eli was so passionate and happy with me about it, and that he was rounding up other kids and he was showing them how to work the telescope and he was telling them to get in there and showing them what was going on, and he could describe it all for them. But the staff that were there, that were running this, were amazing. Absolutely amazing. It was the Omaha Astronomical Society, okay? And they were great. They were so good to us, all right? The Omaha Astronomical Society, these are people who, this is just a hobby. This is just their passion, you know, in their off hours, that they will put hundreds, thousands of dollars into this really cool equipment, and that they will spend at night hours sitting out, you know, in a lawn chair, looking up at the stars with binoculars, with their telescopes, charting things, and just observing the beauty of it. That they'll do this hour after hour, night after night, because it's just that cool for them. And here they were sharing it with us. And there were two ladies on the end. One was a doctor in some Omaha hospital, and the other one a nurse who, on a regular basis, they work in the same area, so they know each other already, and they've got their telescopes set up next to each other, and they were so excited to, like I say, sharing the binoculars, letting us, you know, manhandle all of their equipment, and once they realized that Eli and I knew a little something, and that we were at least excited to learn things, oh God, they were more than happy. More than happy. They could have gone on for hours. Here they had a willing audience that wanted to learn something, and it couldn't have made them happier to share with us. I need to write them a thank you note. I need to send something to the Omaha Astronomical Society to let them know how really awesomely cool they were, because they were just great people. And it was just so much fun. I can't tell you guys. It was, well, I can, because I've been doing it for the last 15 minutes. But you guys, really, if you get a chance, like I say, even just an amateur setup with a pair of binoculars, there's so much you can find. And man, if you've got a local astronomical society and they're willing to let you just hang out with them for a night some night when they're going out doing some observing, you know, because obviously they've got to get together on a regular basis, right? That's why they're a society. If you've got your own local group and you can just tag along with them, they'll share their equipment. They'll let you see really cool stuff. Anyway. What else did I have to say about these people? The staff. This was the other thing I was going to say. That's where I was going with all this. Is the staff at Camp Cedars. These are people who, I'm telling you, like I say, all of them, solid nerds, awesome people, passionate, wonderful people who are doing what they love and sharing what they love with other people. Just because it makes them happy to do it, all right? Because it's not about the money. And this is where the real interesting part of the situation comes in. Jacob had considered the first, you know, he went to Camp Cedars for 3 years, and he had considered possibly going on there as a staff. First year as a staff, at, you know, as a 14-year-old, 15-year-old, you don't get paid. You start off as a counselor in training, which means, yeah, you have some responsibilities, but mostly you're just getting a free week of camp. All right, you get a free week of camp, and you learn how the staff process works. But then, when you start getting paid, this is what Jacob had looked into. When you start getting paid, it's like just over $100 a week. That's it. I mean, oh yeah, granted, you get free room and board, but you know, your room and board, yeah, it's eating at the dining hall and sleeping in a tent. I mean, that's not a whole lot of room and board, and they're getting paid just over $100 a week. All right, for a 7 week stint. So they get them out of it with, like, I don't know what the grand total is, like, what, $750 they make? $740 for the whole 7 week gig. And so therefore, you know, yeah, okay, they get 7 weeks of this awesome, awesome experience, and then they come out of it with $700. Great for them. But if they worked a regular minimum wage job for 7 weeks, what do they make, triple that? I mean, good Lord. They could be making so much more somewhere else, but they're doing this because they love it. Look, I'm telling you, they wake up at 6 in the morning, and they don't get off duty. They don't get to go to bed until 10 o'clock at night, all right? Because 10 o'clock is lights out for the campers. So 10 o'clock is when you're officially off duty. And yeah, they get some breaks in there here and there. But in general, they're kind of on duty for 16 hours a day, 6 days a week. They get one day off through all of this. It's 96 hours for $100. They're doing this because they love it. And I wish the council worked out that they could pay these people more. I had some conversations with some of the older staff, the adult staff, who would be in charge of actually hiring people and this kind of stuff. And they all expressed that, oh, yeah, they would love to be able to pay more. They would love, because there are some people, really cool, passionate, awesome people, who would be really, really good at this job as well. But, you know, for that kind of money, well, yeah, but they've got another job. You know, you can't, like, I'm already working. I can't give up my job for 7 weeks. It's not like they're going to let me come back just because I told them I had to go to Boy Scout camp. It's, you know, that kind of thing. So I wish as a council, I wish as a Boy Scout entity, we could do better by these staff, because they deserve it. And if there's anyone from camp who is listening to this, I put in my vote right now for, yeah, let's pay these guys a little bit more. Really. They've earned it. They deserve it. What my kids have gotten out of this is absolutely priceless. All right. Well, okay. That's not priceless. We're paying $300 a kid, but, it's worth so much more than that. And these guys deserve everything we can possibly give them. So anyway, that's my bit. Do I have anything else about, Camp Cedars? I mean, I have a lot of stuff. There's tons of stuff, but, it's a lot of quirky little stories that I think will come up kind of over the weeks. I think I'm going to wind up talking about this for a while. So we'll just leave it at that. Although, okay, last note about Boy Scouts. There was an interesting conversation I had where I was talking about how I would love to see it if we could get rid of the concept of Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts and just have Scouts. Is it possible that we just have one group? Is it possible? Because, hold on. I got you. There we go. Had to adjust position. All right. Because right now the two organizations run different programs. Similar, but different. And in some ways, the Girl Scouts kind of get short shrift. All right. In my opinion, I haven't done a whole lot of research on this. From what I see myself, from what I've heard, it bugs me. It bugs me because I had a good friend of ours, who was a Girl Scout herself, but also because she had three brothers who were all Boy Scouts, she was heavily involved in the Boy Scouting program as well. And she would get angry when we would have Boy Scouting events and work on Boy Scouting skills and merit badges and stuff like this. She'd be like, how come we don't get to do any of this in Girl Scouts? Like canoeing. That was her biggest beef. Canoeing. Cause they love the water, love being on the water. And she's like, when Boy Scouts do canoeing, one of the things that you have to do to earn your badge is you got to dump a canoe. You got to swamp it. All right. You got to figure out, all right, if I've overturned my canoe, how do I get back? What do I do? Can we get back in the boat? Do we bring it back to shore? How do you handle that situation? And they have to learn that. All right. So they're out there in their life vests with their canoe. And they have to intentionally flip that sucker over and then deal with that situation. She said, Girl Scouts, we don't do that. How come Girl Scouts don't do that? Why don't we dump our canoes? No, we paddle out there. We paddle around. We come back. Yeah, we learn skills, but what about that emergency preparedness part of it? What about, why are we not doing that as Girl Scouts? There's no reason that they couldn't. There's no reason they shouldn't. Why is it different? All right. And there are other areas where you have that same sort of problem. And I think, I don't know, to me, I think the positive benefits of putting the two groups together, having them work together and share in activities and share in, I mean, like Camp Cedars. Camp Cedars is a spectacular camp. It's an amazing camp. Boy Scouts put together a really awesome camp that does really awesome stuff. And why are we not doing week-long Girl Scout camps there? All right. Or for that matter, why are we just not doing week-long camps there? You know, if you want to find a way to separate out genders because you're worried about whatever, we can find a way to do that for sleeping arrangements or for, you know, the showering arrangements with the different houses or the, you know, whatever. You can work all that out. But there's no reason that you can't have boys and girls doing the same activities. No reason. I mean, boys and girls all like riding horses. They all like swimming. They all like climbing that rock wall. They all like the handicrafts. They all like science. They all like, there's no reason that we couldn't be doing this. So anyway, and so I brought that up to somebody else. This is all mostly internal monologue for me. But I bring it up to somebody else. I'm like, wouldn't it be kind of cool if we could just do away with that? And they, out of nowhere, like, already have knowledge of the subject. And I'm like, they voted on that 2 years ago and decided not to do it. I'm like, what? How do I not know this? I didn't even realize that was something that was on their agenda at all. I thought all they did was worry about whether or not we should be dealing with gay people. I didn't realize that it was on our agenda to talk about combining the two organizations, putting the... that's amazing to me, and I would love to see it happen. And, of course, now that I've learned it, have I gone out and done any actual research to follow up? Not yet, but I will be. So I just got back from camp a day ago, people. Come on. But that just fascinates me. The idea that, they're working on that? We could be doing that? That would be so great. Because, it would be great to give them access to some of the resources we have. And it would also be really cool if we could get a piece of that cookie money, if you know what I mean. I mean, that is a sweet deal they got going. Although I say it's a sweet deal, but I think if I remember the numbers correctly, they sell a ton of cookies, but the amount of money they get back to go to their troop per box of cookies they sell is very little compared to when we're out as Boy Scouts selling our popcorn. Like, we've worked out this deal that we're selling overpriced popcorn and making a killing on it, and we get half that money back. I mean, we get a ton of money comes back to us for every box of popcorn we sell. So, Boy Scout popcorn as an investment is a great deal because a lot of that money comes back to us. Whereas Girl Scout cookies, that's a great deal because they're delicious, okay? And also it raises money for Girl Scouts, but not as much as you'd hope. So, yeah, there you go. Anyway, hey, enough about Camp Cedars for right now. Like I say, I will probably come back to it because there's all sorts of interesting, quirky things that comes up. I'm so tempted, but I gotta stop. Next up, what is it? I know what it is, but I should roll down to see if I need to add anything to the intro for it. Nah, we'll just let William Shatner sing to us.
Ooh, she blinded me with science.
She blinded me with science.
Blinded me with science.
That's right, it's my science corner. Oh, that music means if you don't walk away now, you might be in danger of learning something. Alright, I lied when I said I wasn't going to talk about camp, because this was inspired by camp. Elijah, at Boy Scout camp this week, found not one, not two, but three four-leaf clovers. Right, I know, see, that's what I said. Three four-leaf clovers, and I witnessed every single one of them, so it's not like he's making it up. I'm holding them in my hands each time he finds them, and then he shows me, and I get to hold it, and sure enough, stem with four branches, four leaves. It's not a joke. No one scotch taped them together. Nothing. No. Four-leaf clovers. Okay. The first one he found, this was the really amazing one, is kids were looking for four-leaf clovers. They were talking about four-leaf clovers. And so some kid is doing the same thing that we all did at some point looking for four-leaf clovers, is we picked up a three-leaf clover, then we added a leaf to it from another plant, and we just pinched it all together and held it so it looked like a four-leaf clover, and then showed people and pretended we had a four-leaf clover. All right. So some kid does that to Eli, and is showing Eli, oh, look, I found a four-leaf clover. And Eli looks at it and goes, it's not a four-leaf clover. It is, too. No, it is not. You're just holding an extra leaf on there. Eli turns, looks at the ground, and goes, oh, no, here's a four-leaf clover. Snap, picks it up, and sure enough, he just found it. Just looking, and oh yeah, no, this is a four-leaf clover. I'm stunned. Okay, but hey, amazing luck, right? No. The next day, we're walking towards lunch, I think. Anyway, we're headed to a meal, and as we're walking along, he's like scanning the grass as he's walking. He's like, oh, wait, hold on. Oh, look, I found another one. It's right there. Third one took him a little longer. Third one, he was intentionally setting out to look for it. He was scanning the field, and it took him a few minutes, but sure enough, found a third one. It's something in his head. When he is scanning it, his ability to discriminate a flaw in a pattern that he's looking out, and he just, I don't know, something in his head just naturally recognizes that something is out of place there, all right? That he sees the three-leaf pattern, and as he's scanning across the field, he doesn't have to look at individual plants a lot of times, in that he can just kind of scan across and go, hey, there's something that doesn't look right. Oh, yep, that's it. There you go. Me, I have to look at every individual plant. I have to get down there, hands and knees, got to separate them, look at them, go, oh, there's what? No, that's not it. No, that's not it. To me, I see four-leaf clovers all the time, and it's never really a four-leaf clover. I've looked my whole life. I've never found one. He gets three in a week. It's incredible. And so, again, it's just something in how his brain processes patterns that he just sees it. I'm so jealous of that. That is so really cool. I'm wondering what other superpowers he has, because that is an awesome start. But it gets me to thinking about four-leaf clovers in general. And so it occurs to me to wonder, how easy is it to find a four-leaf clover? All right, let's go take a look. And it turns out that everywhere that I look says that in, you know, standard clover, in general, one in every 10,000 plants will have the four-leaf mutation. That there's, it's supposed to be a trefoil plant. It's supposed to grow three leaves. But every once in a while, there's a flaw in it. Boom, it sprouts a fourth leaf. One in 10,000 is just something that happens to clover. Okay. All right. Well, one in 10,000, that's a handy number to know. But, okay, how many is that? I mean, how big an area do you need to have to find 10,000 clover? All right, so I start looking at density of clover, and I find someone who's done some of this work already. It turns out that the estimate is for a field of clover, your average section is going to have 800 plants for every square foot. Okay, also handy. All right, so then how many square feet do I need then to get my 10,000? 12? That's it? 12 and a half square feet will get me. So you're telling me about a 1 meter square, all right, a 3 foot by 4 foot area, and suddenly that's 10,000 clovers. All right, you give me an area that's 3 foot by 4 foot. That's a tiny little patch. 3 foot by 4 foot. Like, that's the square that's, you know, next to the porch. That's just that little section right up by the house. That's just a tiny little bit. And in that, yeah, you're bound to find one, right? Okay. If you take a football field, let's say we set an elementary school loose on a football field full of clover and said, go on out there, guys, find me some four-leaf clover. That football field, and I'm talking, you know, all the way out to the end zones, the full width of the field, if it was covered with clover, there'd be something on the order of 4,500 four-leaf clovers in that field. There's over 4,000 four-leaf clovers in that football field. That's amazing. And yet, I can't find one to save my damn life. You know what's even more exciting about that football field? Is that, there's 4,500 four-leaf clovers out there. But there's probably 40 to 50 five-leaf clovers in there. Oh, yeah. Higher level mutations. That five-leaf clovers? Yeah. You're running about one in a million. Really? That what? That doesn't, I mean, you know, because we've just said, you know, that's not that big a space. Well, okay, yeah, one in a million, that's a much larger spot. But even still, you know, that football field's got 50 of them out there. Five-leaf clovers, that's amazing. Apparently people find them on occasion. Or even six-leaf, which are even rarer. But, so then I say to myself, what's the world record for leaves on a clover? Because it's got to be out there. And sure enough, it is. The record is held by one Shingeo Obara, an elderly man from Japan. And Shingeo Obara found a 56-leaf clover. Are you kidding with me? And go look. There's a picture of it online. Look up 56-leaf clover. It's freaky because it's like, it looks like a whole bunch of plants. It doesn't look like, you know, because you're thinking 56 leaves spread out in a circle around a single stem, but you see three leaf, four leaf. And no, it's not like that at all. It is like they overlap each other and they spread out a little bit, but it's all leaves off of a single stem and 56 leaves. Unbelievable. And okay, but here's the thing. Shingo Obara finds a 56 leaf clover. He broke the previous record, which was a 21-leaf clover found by Shingeo Obara of Japan. Right, right. That 21-leaf clover, that broke the old record of an 18-leaf clover found by Shingeo Obara of Japan. This guy knows his clover. That's what I'm telling you. I am just, the whole thing just fascinated the crap out of me. So, next time you're in a field of clover, pick yourself out a little 3-foot by 4-foot square. Tell yourself, there is a four-leaf clover in there with my name on it. And you still won't be able to find it because, oh, I can't. I have to check each individual plant. And that, you know, clover comes in layers. I'm going to have to push them aside. I'm going to have to dig. I'm going to have to, no, I need to bring Eli with me. Seriously, just have an Eli. He'll get you a four-leaf clover in no time. Let's see. Well, you know what? I was going to go into my gaming table. But I'm not gonna. I'll give you the 1 minute rundown. I'll even give you the music here. I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die. Role-playing games, video games, card games, any games. If it fits on my gaming table, I'm here to share it with you. I was actually really hoping this week that I would have some reports on just introducing scouts and different people to some of the games I brought along with me. And it was, you know, Lost Worlds and Munchkin and Zombie Dice and Flux. And I mean, it was all card games, dice games that could be played really easily and that I could run fairly fast games. Because that's the bit. When you've got a break, if it's something you can play in just 10, 15 minutes, Munchkin would have taken a lot longer. But some of those other ones, I wish I had had time. But you know what? We wound up having so much fun doing other stuff. There were so many activities available. We just never got around to sitting around playing games. So, okay, that's fine with me. But the rundown this week, we did play Pathfinder at camp. I played Pathfinder at camp. Holy crap. It took a while because the Wi-Fi went down just as I got connected. I mean, literally, I plug into Roll20. I'm ready to go. And before I can type anything, Wi-Fi goes out. And I'm a computer guy, so I went behind the counter. The guys were letting me, you know, examine their wiring, figure out where it is. It was something in the router. Later, they swear that something else happened, but no, the router simply wasn't processing. It just wasn't doing its thing. The signal was there. You know, if you plugged in from somewhere else, you were fine. But the minute it got to that router, you can see the router from your machine, but the router's not giving you any information. So, anyway, it doesn't make a difference. I'm so tempted to keep going on about that. So I wound up being an hour and a half. Never did get it sorted out there, but found out that, okay, if I go to a different building, they've got some Wi-Fi over there that I can latch on to. So I finally got into my game, and we played for a little bit. Well, they played for a full session. I got in for half of it. And just had a good time. I mean, it was a, you know, we were fighting a bunch of gnolls and learned that, oh, that's right, we have to use tactics. Forgot about tactics. Okay, we'll get back together. Some teamwork. Tactical play. We'll be better about this. It was, you know, because it wasn't deadly for us. It was a little scary. There was a big hit on one of our fighters. But it went over well. And we had a lot of fun. Everyone enjoyed doing it. We learned some stuff. And we'll be ready for next time. But for me personally, the significance of this session was that my character came out as a lesbian during this, well, in the pre-story that I kind of wrote up in the little interstitial stories of what my character was doing in town in between sessions. And it's a very, and when I say came out as a lesbian, I don't think she knew she was a lesbian until that moment, but anyway, she does now. And it's a sort of G-rated teenager romance thing that I know. Part of me is a little queasy at the idea that, you know, I'm a 45-year-old man writing what is essentially a teenage lesbian romance story. But it's always been part of my vision for the character that I've had this aspect of her built in since the very beginning. And that was okay. And in fact, if you remember way back, I don't even know what episode it was. I should have looked it up. When I talked about, the idea of potentially playing a transsexual character and how at the time I thought, and transgendered is the right term for it now. I think I used transsexual when I talked about it back then, but transgender would be more accurate. And I talked about the idea of playing a transgender character and said I didn't know if I could really do it justice. And part of that was because at the time I was playing a character that I knew to be gay, but I wasn't making a big deal about it publicly because it wasn't something that she had really figured out for herself yet. And that's the reason I was talking about it. I've had this in mind for her since the very beginning. But the end result is, you know, I write it. I'm a little nervous about it because it's kind of a, you know, you don't want to get too, this is an adventure story. This is a, you know, adventure fantasy. It's Dungeons and Dragons, for goodness sake. And so you don't want to get too mushy and too off the rails into some, you know, love story. That's not really what I'm into for the game itself, but this is a part of the character, and so I wanted to develop it. And so I was a little iffy on it, and I wasn't really happy with how it came out, but all right, so I put the thing out. And the end result is everyone went, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, I guess so. That makes sense. All right, good deal. Let's move on. Which is really the right way for people to react. That's really the reaction you should be expecting is that, oh yeah, okay, yeah, no, that makes total sense. All right, cool, we're good. It was just odd. I mean, and I don't think I expected anything different, but it was, I don't know what I did expect. You know what I mean? It was just, because to me it was kind of a big step to take to actually just put that out there. But I think, you know, it would have been kind of offensive for people to come back and go, oh my God, a lesbian. How did that happen? That would have been weird too, right? Right? So anyway, it's just an odd moment. It was just, something that was, I don't know, like I say, important to me to get it on the table there. Cause I explained all of this, to the other players is that I was kind of, when my original intention around this, was that I was never going to make any kind of real announcement about it. I was never going to make it overt or obvious or anything. But this, the fact is, it would be there. It would be there in the background, and it would just be a fact about my character that I wasn't really going to ever make a big deal about. And people who wanted to read into it and realize that, oh, that's what's going on, they could certainly do that. But anyone who didn't care to look that deep, you know, might not even notice it. And as I came around to writing this portion of the story, I realized that it felt really dishonest. It felt weird to keep it sort of under the table or anything like that. It was weird. So, you know, put it out there and realize, you know, now that it's written and it's done, oh, okay. Yeah, no, that makes sense. Now, let's go kill some dragons. Or, actually, I think a harpy is next. I think that's where we're going. We've got some clues that the gnolls that we just fought, we thought they were just bandits, but it may be working for a harpy. That would be, which is interesting, because hey, look, I can fight harpies. I'm a bard. I got the countersong going, so I'm looking forward to it. But anyway, I told you this was going to just be the short 2-minute version, and I've already tripled that. So enough about the gaming table. I'll do more later. Right now, really, we're more than half through this, so let's get right into the pod-o-matic. Hot dog. This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 in his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you come in. You want to hear me have wrong about something? You send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on our forums, and I will add it to the Pod-O-Matic list. Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. And the first number on this is 14. Let me get my Pod-O-Matic list up, and we'll see what we got. 14 is from Mrs. Darks. Mrs. Darks says, oh, this is one of her new questions, I think. Which, by the way, you guys, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. This week, I received probably 50 new Pod-O-Matic questions from all sorts of different people. I'm really excited about it. The list is fuller than it's been in weeks, and it's really exciting to see. So I've got all sorts of new questions in here. Let's see what we get. First one is from Mrs. Darks. So, I know you don't like anything in your coffee, but what about coffees that are designed to be mixed with other things? For example, Vietnamese coffee is brewed directly into sweetened condensed milk and is amazing. However, if you try to make it without said milk, it is barely drinkable. Would you be against this on principle? Okay. I like flavored coffees, okay? I tell you I drink black coffee, but in truth, what I drink is Folgers French Vanilla Coffee, which is still, to me, I can't taste French vanilla in it when I drink it. It tastes to me just like regular black coffee, all right? I don't taste the French vanilla. What I do is I smell the French vanilla. When you brew it, oh, it makes the office smell awesome. So that's why I drink the French vanilla. I like the way the office smells. And the coffee itself, I could be drinking plain Folgers. It would be just fine with me. But I don't mind flavored coffees. I don't mind a good... Look, the first coffee I was ever really into was cappuccino that I got from a friend of mine working in a French-Chinese bistro in the old market in Omaha. And they served cappuccino that I just thought was spectacular. And then I've tried other cappuccinos, and the definition of cappuccino seems to have really changed over the years, that it has become sweeter, in my opinion, from different places. But that was where I started with. And I've had cappuccino and latte and espresso and all sorts of different flavored coffees with milk, coffee with syrup, coffee with all sorts of stuff. And I like them. I have no problem with them, except that they're overpriced, expensive, and they have too many calories in them. That's really what it boils down to for me. Hell, I like Monster coffee, okay? If I could afford it to drink them every day, I mean, because, look, you know, $2.50 a pop, that's a lot of money for a coffee. Drinking a $5 coffee from Starbucks or from Scooters or from, you know, whatever your local little coffee shack on the corner is, you know, picking up your drive-through coffee on the way to work, paying $5 for a coffee, paying $3, $2.50 for a coffee, that's a lot of money for coffee. For one can, cup, bottle, however you drink your coffee, it's a lot of money. And so, like, a Monster coffee, I love Monster coffee. Their Monster Java flavor, whatever it is. Specifically their Kona blend. Oh, that's the best one. But when I get it, it is A, $2.50, and B, it's like 250 calories on top of that, or 220 calories. That's a whole breakfast. So, you know, if I'm gonna get it, I actually get it and then I skip breakfast because that's my breakfast calories, because the thing is all sugar. And they taste spectacular, but it's all sugar. And so that's my big objection to flavored coffees in general. And I don't mind them as a treat. I will still get them once in a while as a treat, but it's because I'm getting it as a dessert. I mean, it really is. It is. It's a dessert treat. It's a special occasion kind of thing. So when I talk about black coffee, look, drink your coffee black for 1 week. If you're going to have coffee every day. But only drink it black, and by the end of the week, honestly, you don't need anything else in your coffee, all right? Black coffee tastes spectacular to you at that point. You just have to get used to it, all right? And then that way, you have the option of always just drinking black coffee, that you don't have to sit there and dump a bunch of artificial sweetener into it. You don't have to go looking for milk or creamer or whatever it is that you put into it. You can just drink some black coffee, and therefore you're getting perfectly good, zero calorie, zero fat caffeine delivery system right into your veins. That's what you need, okay? But if you enjoy flavored coffees and you enjoy the taste and texture and mood of whatever flavored coffees, sweetened coffees, whatever you want to put into them, I fully support you, but really make them a special occasion kind of thing, because the calories that you put into your body are way too important to go wasting them on stuff like that every single day. That's really my opinion. To take, you know, when you're a normal human being and you should be putting somewhere around 1,500 to 2,000 calories into your body every day, maybe you know, maybe up to 3,000 if you're more active, or maybe and you're going to take, you know, 5% of that, 10% of that, and put into the coffee you're drinking. That's a lot. That is a big portion of your calories. You know what I mean? So, at least for me, it is. I'm just not willing to make that sacrifice. But no, I have no problem. If you want to do your flavored coffee, go ahead. That was more of a soapbox than it needed to be, wasn't it? 98. Yeah, that is 98. There's a glare on that bubble. All right, 98 is Mrs. Darks again. Take that, Ronster. If you had to play another player's character in Darks' Pathfinder game, I think I've read this one before. I really think, because it says, not Uncle Ilion. So if I would swear I've read this question before. Did I do this one? Doesn't matter. I'll do it again. I'll give a completely different answer. If I had to play another character in DM Darks' Pathfinder game, who would you choose? Not Uncle Ilion. Of the ones that are in there right now, I would play Dwin. Dwin still fascinates me as a character. Dwin is the simple farmer woman who has become a warrior. She is the classic, the Luke Skywalker character. I mean, really, simple farm girl who is now the big, powerful warrior in our group. Right? That's, I like her. I like her a lot. She is really naive, and yet she is the muscle of this group. She is big and badass and tough. She reminds me a lot of Brienne from Game of Thrones. There's something really cool about that. But I also, I mean, again, I'm drawn to powerful female characters for some reason. I would be perfectly happy to play Shalilu, who is actually Mrs. Darks' own character. I'm sure she wrote this question before she was actually playing in the game, but Elfin Ranger, oh, she's cool too. So I would take that one on. But I could get into any character in this game. All right, Uncle Ilion is a great one. The two-weapon halfling fighter thief, great character. I've always loved halflings. Halflings and dwarves, my favorite races in Pathfinder D&D. Always have been. But, I mean, who's left? It's Eldthor. It's Kayliana. I could play any of those. But I would probably start with Dwin. Was that what I answered last time? Did I do this question before? Somebody tell me. Somebody write in and tell me that I've answered this question before and I answered it consistently, because I would love to know that I've done that. It doesn't matter. Dwin, there's my answer. 08. 08 is? Who wants to put their money down on Mrs. Darks? Oh, you'd be wrong. It's Ronster. Haha, I knew he'd make a comeback. All right, Ronster says, Reavers versus zombies. Reavers would eat that shit up. I am not. And here's the thing. Reavers aren't even immune to zombieism, right? Reavers are just as vulnerable as anybody else, and guess what? They don't care. They will tear it up. They will destroy it, because that's what Reavers do. All right, Reavers win, and they're an unstoppable force. They are, now, granted, zombie hordes, also force of nature, I'll grant them that, but zombie hordes are motivated by pure, mindless, instinctual hunger, all right? And it's not even a real hunger, because they don't get anything out of what they consume, all right? So it's a mindless hunger with no purpose whatsoever. Reavers are very intentionally, maliciously evil. They are purposefully, destructively evil. And that is going to win out over mindless force of nature any day. Honestly. The zombies stand no chance in this scenario. 61. I have got to move him to a different spot because I am having a tough time reading him. Alright, 61 is... Mrs. Darks is back. Mrs. Darks says, best alternate use... Okay, no, I've definitely read this one. Best alternate use of office supplies you've ever seen in use. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, that's making me laugh really hard. It's very much a Mike Myers, Austin Powers sort of line. Ready? Let me try it again. with the right inflection here. Best alternate use of office supplies that you've ever seen in use. Okay. I'm sorry. I don't mean to mock you. You're very sweet, and I do this all the time myself, so I find this really funny. Anyway, alternate use of office supplies. Yeah, I did answer this because it is, the answer is enclosing Yancey's desk in old speaker boxes, which aren't really office supplies. Oh, man. All right, actual office supplies. Okay, you can build the little push pin and eraser pig. That's a great one. What are some good ones that I've actually seen in my office? Oh, no, I know. Railgun. Magnetic railgun. We once built a... God, I hope this is the answer I gave last time, but I don't remember ever describing it. We built using a ruler and some magnets that we pried out of... I can't remember, was it? God, was he pulling them out of hard drives? Because those are some powerful magnets, but I can't remember if we could break those up appropriately and make them work. It must have been where they came from, because we had some powerful magnets. And so it's a ruler and powerful magnets, and our office supplies are a little bit different from yours because we have access to all sorts of really cool computer parts. But it was that, the ruler, tape, magnets, and then what did we use for the ammo? It was some kind of ball bearings. I don't know what they came out of. And so there's really simple instructions online. You can find them. If you want to build a magnetic railgun with really simple equipment, the instructions are out there. But you have a series of magnets, a series of ball bearings located just behind each magnet. You release a ball bearing on one end. It slams into the first magnet, which then knocks the other ball bearing into the next magnet. Repeats this process all the way down the line, until the last ball bearing shoots off the end of your ruler, and I mean, it flings across the room. It is, you can't, I don't even know if I can do it justice describing it, because I'm telling you, I've got a 12-inch long ruler. I set down a ball bearing on one end, and the magnet pulls it over. I mean, I'm not flinging it, I'm not doing anything, I just set it down, and it rolls slowly towards that first magnet and accelerates as it goes, because the magnet is pulling it pretty hard. And I mean, when this chain reaction sets off, it rockets across. The chain reaction just snaps across all these ball bearings and magnets until that last ball bearing, boom, flies off, hits the door on the other side of the room, which our office is long. All right, so it's like a good 30 foot, and I mean, pings against the door hard. All right, you can't see. Can you hear me flicking? Yeah, that's my ring shaking as I flick. But the impact is, I mean, it's solid. It's knocking that door. That was awesome. And you would think that we'd just keep that thing laying around, right? No, at some point, well, now we set it over here, and we needed the ruler, so we stripped everything off of it, and then, you know, you set it aside, because, well, we may want to build that again, and then you forget about it. Now I go out and find some magnets and ball bearings and build another rail gun, because that's impressive as all get out. Man, the amount of things that we found ways to shoot across the office. One of the best, by the way, this is not office supplies, well, it is in our office, but, if you can get a hold of an air cannon, it's a hunk of plastic that we bought it at Walmart, for goodness sake, all right? But you can buy them for like $15. And it literally is a hand grip with a big old barrel of a cannon on the top of it. I mean, like good, you know, 13, 14 inches across this barrel is. And it's got a rubber band plastic membrane on the back of it that you pull it back and you let it go and boom, and it will shoot what is essentially, you got to imagine a smoke ring but without the smoke, right? Which is exactly what it is. The air comes rolling out of this thing at the end, and that ring of air moves in a nice consistent forward fashion, and you can hit stuff 40 feet away with it. Like, if you've never seen one in action, it's just the coolest thing. You pick up your little air cannon, you pull it back and you let it go, and someone 40 feet away, all of a sudden, boom, it'll hit them, and you'll watch their hair flip up because the air has just smacked them in the side of the head. It's so cool. And we have one of those that we keep in our office, and I mean, for years, you know, we would whip that thing out at least once a week and just wait, because you can hear people coming down the hallway. You can hear the echoes a long way off, and you just wait. And you try and time it so that just before they pass our door, you let go with that ball of air. And just as they hit our doorway, boom, they get hit. That's awesome. So much fun. Yeah, we play a lot. Shut up. We work hard. That's what we tell ourselves. So anyway, yes, magnetic railgun. That would be the best use, alternative use of office supplies in my office. 49. 49 is from Ronster. Well, if the two of you just want to duke this out, I suggest an arm wrestling contest. Ronster says, Mike, please tell the listening audience about the time when you were given some very good, really the time I was given very good news unexpectedly. Huh, do you have a time in mind, Ron? Because I'm going to have to think about this a little bit. Hold on, let me take a drink here. You know what the most common unexpected good news for me is? And it shouldn't be unexpected at all, because I should have this all plotted out. But it's always the moment when I remember that, oh, hey, we haven't submitted any of our AFLAC claims yet. And so, you know, here we are kind of scrimping because the month's a little tight on money, and oh man, where did all of our cash go? What? And then we realize, yo, you know what? We haven't put in any of our AFLAC yet. Oh God, we got medical bills like crazy. Here, let's submit those quick. Oh, look at that. $1,200 back. That's awesome. That's the kind of, and again, there's no reason that any of that should be unexpected, because I should just be remembering to submit those claims right away. And then just getting the money back as we go, and not thinking about it. But no, I kind of set them in a little stack. And then after a while, it's like, oh, that's right. I forgot we have money coming to us. That's great. That explains why I didn't have any money last week. I get it now. So again, shouldn't be unexpected, but for me, the way my mind works, and I tell my wife, and she's like, yeah, duh, of course, just get them here and I'll submit them. Oh, okay. Yeah, sure. She always knows. I don't. So I love that. I love the feeling of, oh, that's right. I have money. Oh, that's great. It's a lot like finding a $20 bill in your old jacket when you get it out, except, you know, it's like $1,200. That's great. Okay. Anyway, let's do one more. All right. And I got submissions this week from Humongous and Zimney and Billy Bob Talvin. Talvin sent me a bunch of new ones. How awesome is that? And so far all we've seen is Ron and Mr. Darks, which is great because I love both of them. But let's see if we can get something from somebody else before we end here. So this is going to be 67, and that is from... Well, 67 is from my wife. That is awesome. No, it's not. Oh, shoot. My wife Lisa says, John Wayne joins your Pathfinder mission. Do an impression. Oh. Well, what? Oh God, I can't do it. All right, hold on. Let me get myself together. I can't. I'm laughing so hard in my own head. Oh God, yeah, no, she's giggling in the other room now. God darn her. Okay. hold on. I gotta get myself together. Let me collect myself here. I'm gonna get another drink quick. All right, let me collect myself, because I can do this. It's gonna be horrible. You've all been warned. But, here we go. John Wayne, sitting down to play a little Pathfinder with us. Oh, yeah, okay, no, that would be cheap. That would be cheap. Because here's my impression. Are you ready? Hold on, I have to turn the microphone for this. John Wayne is joining my Pathfinder group. Here we go. Ready? Yeah, because we play on Roll20. It's played by text. See, that's typing. Okay, no, but that's not good enough. No, I know what she's talking about. Let's get the microphone back over here. Okay. It would go a little something Like, I can't bring myself to do it. Why am I so self-conscious? I've got to get over this. I've got to. All right. Here we go. God, it's like being 11 years old and trying to go off the high dive, and I can't go off. Every time I get right up to the edge and I think, okay, I'm going to jump. And then, no, okay, wait, not this time. This time, okay, hold on. All right, ready? Okay, you know what? I'm going to climb back down the ladder, and I'm going to try this again in 20 minutes. That's what I'm going to do. I get myself right to the precipice, and then I can't get myself to go over, and it's just wrong. All right, so I've got to do this. I've got to, so we're going to, right? Okay, I'm just being an idiot. Ready? Here's John Wayne sitting down at the table to play a little Pathfinder with me and my friends. I'll have you know I don't go in for any of this nerd shit. Pilgrim. There you go. That's all I got. See, that wasn't even so tough. I made it way worse by stretching that out. And yeah, it was a terrible impression, but you guys knew it was going to be a terrible impression. Why am I so afraid of embarrassing myself? I mean, I sit here and I talk to you guys for 2 hours a week, and I embarrass the crap out of myself on a regular basis. And yet, somehow that little performance piece was too much for me. I don't know what's wrong with me. That is so weird. You know what? Let's cleanse the palate and do one more. 27. Hopefully nothing from my wife. Let's see. 27 is from... all right, we'll close out with Mrs. Darks, apparently. Do you like your gummy candy sour or sweet? Sweet. I can do sour candies a little bit, like sour Skittles I can do. I'll take a few of them, but in general, I'd prefer to not do sour. I just like sweet candies. That's me. And I think it's a factor of age, because it's just not what I grew up with. Whereas my kids have grown up with sour candies on everything, and they love sour candies. They'll take sour anything, if they can get their hands on it. So I think that's all it is. You know what? That was a quick one. One more. 23. We don't even have to go far for it. So 23 is also from Mrs. Darks. She did not submit that many. I don't understand how it's coming up this often, but all right, we'll take them. Mrs. Darks says, what other cons would you like to attend besides Gen Con? I've talked about this before. Comic-Con. I gotta go to Comic-Con. Any gaming convention at all is gonna be spectacular for me, or any nerd convention in general. I don't mind it. Look, the Omaha has a gaming convention that comes around. They're looking at doing other, there's things that are even available to me locally. All right. And I've just never gotten out to get to them. I would love to go to any of them, but number one choice, Comic-Con. And I know Comic-Con has gotten explosively huge over the last few years, and people say it's not what it used to be. But no, it's something I really want to see. Just that all of that nerd content all coming together in one place is just something that seems super cool to me. And it's something that my wife wants to go to with me. So, again, it'll be Gen Con this year, Gen Con for the next two boys when they hit 16, and then somewhere in there or just after that, the convention will be Comic-Con, and it'll be just me and Lisa, and we'll go out there, and we'll have a blast, and we'll meet everybody, we'll see everything, or as much as we can fit into, you know, however many days we get to be there, and we'll have a great time. So Comic-Con will be the big one. That's the one that we'd really love to hit. But, you know, all right, you know what? One more. Double aught. That was worth waiting for, wasn't it? 100. Let's see what we got for double aught. It is at the bottom of the list, obviously. And it's from Zimny. Told you Zimny submitted some new ones. All right, Zim says, you've managed to convince your family to make your own homemade remake of the Avengers. Who is playing whom? Okay. The obvious first choice is, I was going to say my wife obviously would play the Black Widow, but A, that's sexist to assume that she's automatically going to play a female role, or that Black Widow has to be played by a female. Certainly we can break this up a little bit, but actually, if we're going to just follow along standard gender assignment here, my wife will actually be Scarlet Witch because she really liked Scarlet Witch in the second Avengers movie, and I have always loved Scarlet Witch in general. I just thought she's a spectacular character in the comics. She was one of Scarlet Witch and Vision featured heavily in the very first Avengers comic I ever owned. And I've just always had a thing for Scarlet Witch in general. I've just always thought she was a cool character. So I'd love to see my wife play that because she likes the character as well. So that's cool. Noah is quite obviously the Hulk. And you would know that if you knew Noah because he is brainy. He's got the Bruce Banner part down pretty easily, but also he just does a good Hulk. He just has it going. So I think he'd be really, really good at that. Which leaves, let's see, Jacob is going to be Captain America. Because Jacob's our paladin. That's what he does. That's it. When he played Pathfinder with us at home, paladin was his first choice of character. That was just something in him that he likes playing that guy. He likes being the good guy, the really good guy. I think Aiden is going to be, Hawkeye. And I don't know if he's going to be excited about that choice, but Hawkeye is a little bit more into the covert ops, a little bit more, just a little sneakier, a little, has to be a little cleverer, I think, than some of the others who can just sort of power their way through stuff. And I think Aiden would be really good at that. I think he'd enjoy that role. I think he would really like being that guy. So that leaves me with Eli. And Eli, Eli is a tough one because Eli would also do a good Captain America. He follows in his brother's footsteps on that. But, I think I'm going to give him Thor. I just like him as Thor. And I think, look, if anyone on our family is worthy to lift the hammer, it would be Eli. I think he'd be glad to know that. And so that means, and it seems like by process of elimination, I've just made myself Iron Man. All right. Which I have made myself Iron Man, but it's not just process of elimination. I actually intended to put myself there because I look exactly like Robert Downey Jr. So it's all perfect. All right, that brings us to the very end of the podcast. So, well, yeah, not really the end. You guys know how this works. But the end of these portions of the podcast, which means before we do the credits, we got to bring out GLaDOS and let her do a recap. Go on, GLaDOS, give it to us.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2015 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week, I used Weezer's In the Garage. I did She Blinded Me with Science as performed by William Shatner, and that was it. You know what? All the songs I use on my show are on iTunes. You check them out there. You buy them. You enjoy them. I wouldn't put them on a podcast if I didn't love them. Go give them some love in return. If you want to get your very own pocket mod, and mine, by the way, is just disintegrated. Just disintegrated. I don't know what I did at camp that really put this much wear and tear on my back pocket, but this one's just falling apart on me. So I need to get myself a brand new one. If you want to get yourself one, go over to pocketmod.com. They will give you instructions for printing up and folding your very own pocket mod for free. These suckers are handy and awesome. You should use them. If you want to do something nice for my podcast, seriously, go recommend it to your friends. Spread it around. Hey, while I was at camp, I actually ran across a bunch of people playing, as I told you, staff members, playing Magic the Gathering while they're on their breaks. And I said to myself, if there was ever my target demographic, these guys are it. I already told you, wonderful nerds at camp. And here I am walking in on them playing Magic the Gathering. So I found a couple of occasions to make some conversation, talk to them about games. And, oh, yeah, really? Well, I'm into D&D myself. Oh, heck yeah. God, I'm so into Pathfinder. I do a whole nerd podcast on it. Really, podcast? No kidding? Oh, yeah, I have my card right here. Which, by the way, thank you to Mr. and Mrs. Dark for giving me these lovely, lovely business cards because I've been putting them to good use. Spreading around the love. That's what I'm doing. So, seriously, tell other people about it. Get some friends in. Have them listen. I would love to share this with as many people as possible. If you want to contact me, You can always email me, mike@nerdprideradio.com. Twitter, I'm @nerdprideradio. Facebook page, I love my Facebook page, facebook.com/nerdprideradio. But to be totally honest, as I tell you every week, the very best way to come talk to me is sign up for my forums, nerdprideradio.com/forums. You sign up there, you send me a message, we will hang out together, we will become best friends in the world. What fun. Hey, real quick before we get into listener betrayal, let me just do a quick Mike was wrong. Earlier, I said I come talk to you guys for 2 hours every week. That was a lie, and we all know it. I don't, 2 hours? And this is how my mind works, by the way. Ever since I made the I come talk to you for 2 hours every week comment, it has been circling my brain the entire time going, why did you say 2 hours? You know it's not 2 hours. It's an hour and a half. Hour and a half would have been a good solid number to say, because that's usually, you know, an hour 45. I do that a lot. And I could round that to 2 hours, but only once or twice has it ever actually been 2 hours. So, man, I got to be more accurate. But anyway, I didn't have to correct that. You guys all knew what I meant. It was silly. Silly is what it was. But instead, what we should be doing right now is listener betrayal. At the beginning of every podcast, I go out, and as I start recording, I put out a post on my forums. I put out a post on Facebook and say, hey, I'm recording. If you guys want to add to it, go ahead and post here. And whatever you guys type up while I'm speaking, I will come to the end of this cast and read it off for you. So here I am. Going out to check Facebook, and let's do a refresh. Home. Oh, look at that. I got some commentary. I got some commentary. I know I do. Yes. All right. I have. What the heck? I thought it said that I got a comment from Ron, but I don't see a comment from Ron. What am I missing here? Let me try again. Ron? Oh, no, he commented on a different post. Weird. Oh, Ron missed this one. All right, anyway, hey, here it is. my comment is from Nellie. And Nellie says, Gen Con's like 2 weeks away. And then she squeeze. I can't squee. Squee, I guess. Can't wait to see you there. Have you ever seen Chicken Limo? What? Have you ever seen Chicken Limo? No, Derek and I booked it on Friday for the wedding. Hope you are well. Yes! Yes, it's going to be spectacular. Gen Con in 2 weeks, I get to meet Nellie in person. I get to meet her lovely husband. I'm very excited. Me and Dave Eliahad have been passing back messages back and forth because we're trying to arrange our driving plans. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be spectacular. I'm really looking forward to it. With any luck, again, fingers crossed, we're going to record an episode while we're there. This is going to be great. Episode 100. So, yeah. Nellie, I look forward to meeting you. I really do. This is going to be a great time. And then, oh, I should say done here so people don't keep trying to post. There we go, done. All right, and next, I go back to my website, and Nerd Pride Radio, listener betrayal. Oh, I have a comment. It's from Eliahad. How much you want to bet? No. No, it is not about Gen Con. That's awesome, too. All right. He says, done. Let's get that finished up. Okay. Eliahad posts on Nerd Pride Radio forums and says, darn it. Hey, Mike. I hope recording's going really, really well. It is. Well, yeah, it is. You know what? It is. I stumbled a couple of places. Let me do a quick, since you brought it up, all right? It's your fault, man. I stumbled a couple of places. On the gaming table, I think I was way too awkward. I wanted to talk about it a little bit, and I wanted to say something about my character coming out, and I didn't prepare anything for it, so I didn't have a really profound statement to make, and I feel like I just kind of stumbled around awkwardly about that. Not real comfortable with it. And then also, the John Wayne impression. I could have done so much better. I could have, you know what? I'm kicking myself. I should have just gone with it, punched right through it, and just been done. I should just, oh, man. Instead, I went all chicken on it, and it was crazy. Absolutely crazy. Wait, speaking of the word chicken, what's a chicken limo? I gotta go to Google image search. Let's just image search right away. And go, come on. I know how Google works. There it is. And go, chicken limo. Chicken limo, Indianapolis. It's right there. Oh my God, are you kidding with me? That's amazing, Nelly. That is really, you've done that for your wedding? Because that is the coolest thing I've ever seen. I don't know why every town doesn't have a chicken limo. That is amazing. Quick, everybody, go to Google image search. Search for chicken limo. That's right. Tool around in that for your wedding. That's amazing. Good on you, Nelly. That is great. All right. Anyway, back to my friend Eliahad. I hope recording's going really, really well. Do you read Terry Pratchett? If you do, what do you think of Discworld in all of its forms? I have never read a thing by Terry Pratchett, but I'm telling you, Discworld is on my list. I actually have made a commitment that I need to read Discworld. This is a cultural touchstone item that I just need to know about. And I don't want to do it, because other things that I know I'm never going to get around to, I've gone out and I'll read the summaries and the analysis of them online, and I'll educate myself so I'll know what it is and I can understand some of the references. But Discworld's one that I don't want to go do that, because I actually want to read the books. I don't want to just hear about it. I don't want to just know about it. I want to experience it. And I want to get out there and do that. Unfortunately, I have to read Kyle's book. I still haven't done that. Can you believe that? I have been putting off all sorts of reading. I have to read Kyle's book. I have two other books that are sitting on my Kindle waiting for me to read that have come from, one was a recommendation from my wife that she read it and said I should really read it. No, in fact, I think I have two of them from her. And then there's one other, and I can't remember what it is, but my Kindle's dead. I'm not going to go try and look this up. Plus, I got The Lotus Caves from my son for Father's Day. I could probably knock that sucker out in a day. All right, 2 days. I need to read that one. After I take care of those, the books that I am obligated to read and I need to get to, because I actually think I'll really enjoy them too, but I have to read them. And then I think Discworld is going to be the next thing on my list. I really do. I should make a list somewhere so I don't forget these things, or at least have them all lined up in my Kindle in order so that I can actually get to them when I need to. But having said, shoot. And the gaming history, the history of role-playing games that I bought, I only read, I only got through most of the first book. I've still got three more books of that. I forgot I even own those. I gotta get those. I think part of the problem is I had trouble getting them to my Kindle, and so I wound up reading them on my computer. I need to get those over to my Kindle so that I will actually read through them. Oh, I am so behind on reading. I don't read as much as I used to anymore, and I need to. I've got a whole lineup of books. Oh, man. And yes, that'll be one of them. Tell me how awesome it is, but don't give anything away, because, you know, I'm going to do it. So anyway, yes, I will. Now, that's it. We're all done. Say goodnight, R2.